Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and everything in between, welcome to the Kevin Clifton Show. Now I'm going to get straight to it. So in the last few weeks, I've been putting out on social media, who would you like to hear from? What sort of thing would you like more of on the Kevin Clifton Show? And overwhelmingly, we've had a load of people saying, we want more Strictly episodes. Can we do more? Can you interview more Strictly people? And I said, sure. Who would you like to hear from? And there's a couple of names that came up quite a lot. And one name that came up, probably more than any other, was the Strictly superstar, who is the only one in history to have won back-to-back glitter balls. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everything in between, it's Oti Mabuse. How you doing, Oats?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Do you know, this is literally in my whole life, probably the third podcast I've ever done.
Really?
Ever. Yeah, ever. Ever.
Interesting.
It seems like I'm doing a lot, but I don't.
Well, it seems like every time I turn on the TV, put the radio on, listen, like open a magazine, a newspaper, I'm seeing your face at the moment. So that
I'm like that zit you can't get rid of. It's like you pop me on one side, I'll come up on the other side of the face.
No, or you're just the one that the whole nation's going, we want more, we want more. So I had Motsi on the podcast. It was a while back, it's last year sometime actually. It was definitely Before Come Dancing, the last series. So, and she was great. She had some amazing wisdom for all of us, and the way she goes about with her dance school and her attitude towards teaching like the next generation and her attitude towards what dance is and stuff. And it was really interesting. And obviously, number one, you're a superstar. You're a Strictly superstar. You've done really well on Strictly. So that's why I wanted to talk to you. But also, I've noticed from things that I've sort of caught you talking about here and there and social media and things, that I feel like me and you are into some of the similar things and sort of similar people, like
you know,
the Jay Shetties and Tony Robbins of the world. We're big.
We go deep.
Yeah, I'm very big on mindset. So
I'd
like to get stuck into some of that on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Well, because I think you've probably got a lot to say about that. But just to start with, I'm always interested in any artist that I'm sort of talking to on the podcast, actors, singers, dancers, you know, whoever. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in why they got into doing what they do. So tell me about like your sort of origin story of it. Why did you end up getting into dancing?
Well, mine is quite... And then people think that I wanted to do it. So obviously you spoke to Motsi. Motsi is 10 years older than me. So she's a whole decade ahead of me. And she was dancing first. That's a whole decade. I'm putting it nicely. my mom basically really wanted to dance. And in South Africa, in those days, we grew up in South Africa. It was apartheid times. They weren't allowed to. There were no facilities. Black and white people could not mix. Therefore, no one could teach her who could do it. At that time, it was a mainly white kind of, it was a white pastime that people used to have, and black people weren't allowed. And anyway, black people weren't allowed to gather in groups because that was illegal. So for my mom, that was no, I know, right? So that was a no. And then she got her first daughter, and then she got her second daughter, and she's like, this thing that I absolutely love. She loved watching the women in hold and being swooshed around the floor and the dresses and the hair and the makeup. And she's like, if I can't do it, I'm going to make my daughters do it. So my mom became the ultimate dance mom. And I mean everything, but like the crazy rehearsal times, the driving. And my sisters did it for about 10 years. And then I was born. And they would always go to competitions and rehearsals, and I would always just be there, just the random little girl. I was there. And I used to sit there in rehearsals and watch my sisters dance and poke my mom and be like, I could do that, and I could totally do that better. And I was like three. I remember being, nah, I could do that better. I could do that better. And then one day we went home and we were watching some show. I think it was Come Dance or something like that. And I switched off the TV and I put on my mom's shoes and I started dancing in front of my whole family. I was like, it's my time now. It's my time. It watched me dance. And I did my sister's choreographies. And I was like, this is how you should do this. This is how you should do this. You're not using your eyes. You're not using your face. And my mom was like, you talk so much. Such a big game. Next weekend, I had my first dance partner. And there I was. And they were teaching me how to dance. But only because I was like, I could do this. And they were like, prove it. And so that's how I started. It was like this thing of, you think you're great. At the age of four, prove it. And so that's how I got into it. But I loved it because it was, I guess when you, I always feel like anything that you do that other people don't do makes you special. And I'm a Leo. I love being special. Like I love, if you're going to wear red, I'm going to wear yellow. Every single day you're wearing red, I'm going to stick out. And Latin and ballroom made me special. There weren't any girls in my dance class or my school or extramural activities that said that they could, they're Latin dancers, not ballerina, not hip hop, not cultural, not street, Latin. So it just added a little bit of class to what I was saying. And so I wanted to prove that I could dance. And that's how I got into it.
Interesting. So it's actually you from the start sort of set out to be different. It's like it was your point of difference. It was like this is what I can be that is different to everyone else.
I have like and it's not an obsession but an admiration for things that are completely different but special and unique. I've always liked that. I've really always like even if you see me today in my everyday life, I dress like a boy a little because I feel like that makes me special, because whenever people see me on TV, I look strictlified, I look glamorized, I look like this, but in my everyday life I'm like that. And I think in my head that makes me special, because I'm not going to be dressed up pretty all the time, but the fact that I'm normal and I'm okay with that, I feel makes me special. I just like that.
Yeah.
You've seen me wake up and be like, yo, Kev, what's up? I just like different things, always different. And it doesn't have to stick out, but it has to be different.
I wonder where that comes from. Like, have you explored it at all in terms of like any particular reason for it? Or is it just part of your nature that's always been there?
I think it's part of my nature, but it's also if I think from my family time, and I think me growing up as a child, there were three girls in my family and we were all completely different. We were really all completely different. And what I remember probably, it's such a funny memory, is that because I have two older sisters and they're the similar age, my mom always had to buy two of the same thing, always. So if I have a sister called Pimelo, if Mutsi got like a green hat, Pimelo would like, I want a green hat. Why am I getting a different one? We're the same. Why this is not fair? You need to treat us all the same. And what would happen is when they outgrew these clothes, I would get two of the same thing. And I was like, why couldn't you have just fought for a yellow one? So like, I never understood why everything had to be the same. I don't want two pink hats. I have two pink hats. Why didn't you ask for a green one? And so there was this idea of, no, I hate now. One, I look like you, but I got two of the same things. So I look like you twice a week. And so I was like, I just hate this. I just want to be different. And I was like, I want black. And my mom's like, what? I've spent 10 years buying two of the same thing. Now you're going completely opposite. And I just love that. And also getting a reaction out of my mom. She gave me something like food. And I'm like, I don't like it because these two like it. Because they like it, I hate it. Just rebelled all the time.
Yeah, so that's where it comes from. And that's just to like everything in your life. Everyone's doing this. I've got to do this.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And then, so you've ended up, you've got a partner and you've gone into competition straight away?
Yes. Yes, immediately, yeah. Straight away. And this is a funny story of how hardcore my mom was. So I got this guy, we were four, and we danced together until we were six. And I got fed up that we weren't doing as well as we should have been in my head, right? I'm done. I was like, this is not something that I, and I was like, I know I can do more. I really know I can do more. So we went to a dance competition, Sun City. Don't know if you've been, Rumba in the Jungle. There was a big world championship competition there.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
And they were
famous,
Yeah. So that competition was like 1996, 1998. Yeah. I said to my mom, I want more. I want to do more. This is not enough. this is not what I want. Everybody's doing the same thing. So my mom then saw a little boy that she liked that lived in the same area. And she's like, you. Do you like dancing? And he's like, yes. Okay, I have a girl for you. We're going to change your t-shirt. You're going to go to the back room. You're going to learn a cha-cha and a jive. You're going to practice and you're going to compete. So we were like, fine. Mutsi was there. 2 8-year-olds. We learned a whole new cha-cha choreography, a whole new jive choreography in the break. We re-entered the competition same day as I broke up with this guy. And we won. And we won. yeah.
Wow.
So from the age of 8, I remember, and I was like, this is it. This is the risk this is the reward that comes with taking a risk and knowing that you want more and you deserve more. And I was like, I need to keep up. Y'all need to keep up with me. Honestly, it was like that. And so from that moment, it was just like, I needed to take risks and do what I needed to do and believe in myself to achieve greatness. And at that time, that was everything. It was a small trophy. It was literally the size of a teacup. And I don't know if you guys have this in South or in England, but you know, like a Coca-Cola bottle. I'm talking so much.
No, it's great. Yeah, I'm just writing notes and stuff and like, God, this is really exciting. Go on.
Yeah, so like they take a Coca-Cola bottle, right?
Yeah.
And they melt it so the bottom comes off. And then they place the bottom on top of the Coca-Cola bottle, right? So, and then you flip it upside down and it looks like a trophy. Those were all trophies. Those were all trophies. And then they would just write first place. Yeah, that was it. That's how poor it was, but it just meant everything. Like,
you still have one of them. Somewhere.
At home. For years, we were like, these are expensive. They're made out of glass. And then one day we just really looked at it and we were like, I think this is a Fanta or a Coca-Cola or a Sprite bottle that's just been remade. Wow. DIY.
Wow.
Yeah.
But what I love about that, though, is like you say, it's teaching you from a young age, like to, take a risk, like you said, to back yourself, but also that you have it in your capacity to, if it's not working, change it and go again with a different idea.
Yes.
Like that it doesn't, you don't have to just be like, oh, this is it. This is not working and I'm stuck on this path. It's like, change it, go with something else, try something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I feel like that's something that you've probably taken from that moment into your life that's probably helped you deep down.
It still is. I have so many conversations with my middle sister about life, because she said I used to be a little sassy, feisty girl, because this like talks about relationships and just how you communicate with people. I never saw the purpose of struggling or staying in a situation for the sake of I'm working on it, and I worked in it. I'm not that person that's going to be in a situation, just say if I argue with my mom and I can see that this argument is not going to go anywhere and it doesn't serve me, I'm not going to fight through it. I'm not. I'm like, I don't have the time. I'm not. It's not working. If it's not working, let's just let it go. So I've always been like that. And if it's not working, what can we do to make it better?
Yeah.
Anything like that. That's, of course, that gives you a little bit of attitude because you go, this is not my time. But like the situations always came up in my it kind of like they always came up to me where if something never really worked for my life, for my journey, for my future, for my ambition and where I wanted to go, I needed to change it because the time that I'm wasting trying to fix something that you know if something's going to work, deep down you all know. The time that I'm using to fix this, I could be using it somewhere else to do something better.
Yeah.
I'm very precious with my time. I'm very precious with my time because if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it 100%. For me, there's always a plan A. There is no plan B because if I have a plan B, it takes time away from plan A. So I'm going to do it 100% all the time. If it doesn't work, I move on and I do whatever I need to do 100%. But I can also acknowledge when I'm wrong and when it's time to change. That was always key.
Yeah. But then it's like, rather than, okay, let's move to plan B because you didn't make one. It's like, okay, let's form a new plan A and go 100% into that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I take the skills that I've learned. I always, with any situation, take the good out. You keep the good. And what was bad, you find ways to make them better. Mm-hmm. That was for me always number one.
So good, brilliant. Actually, I was going to talk about this later, but because it sort of links in, what I like about like some of the things that you've just been saying, you're sort of linking it to, you know, what you want to achieve or like your ambitions, you know, in life. And what's here is that you're sort of unapologetically ambitious with stuff you want to do, because I feel like I know, funny, but like I do feel that there's this thing, especially with women, where you're sort of not allowed to be ambitious, otherwise you get really judged. And I was talking about this a lot on the last quickly, where Maisie, for example, was doing great. She came all guns blazing first few weeks, and so many people judged her, like, oh, I don't like Maisie, she's too ambitious. And I find that such a thing. It's like, why are we taking that opinion of someone, like it's a negative opinion that they want to do good stuff, that they have ambition. Like why? But I find that it's mostly women that get that. And what's cool to hear is that there's someone like you is out there kicking ass, achieving things and going, yeah, I want to. I am ambitious, and there's things I want to do with my life. I think it's a great message, actually.
I think, do you know what it is about, I'm going to say about this, first of all, it's so many things. I think culturally, anyway, I'm South African, and in South Africa, you have to be ambitious. Like, you have to. And if you don't say it, the girls just, they kind of go, why are you here? We're like, what do you want? What do you want to do with your life? If you're not claiming what you are, it becomes a part of our lifestyle. It's who we are in South Africa. We're very ambitious as people. But I think the one thing about, and I'm not saying straight about Maisie, but the thing that I see in this country is people appreciate you when you're honest. They appreciate you when you are upfront about things. They appreciate it when you say one thing and then you act as what you say.
Yeah.
So if I was to ever say to someone, oh, I'm shy. I'm the girl next door. I'm not ambitious. I'm not competitive. I think the whole nation will close their doors. They'll throw their phones away and stop voting because it's so obvious that I am ambitious. I am competitive. It's obvious. I don't even need to say it. So the moment I say things or act in a certain way that is not genuine to who I come across as, that becomes, people disconnect. Because there's a disconnect. And the one thing about the British public is that they spot that like that. They bought it like that. And so for me, with my ambition, I've always just been honest with it. I did this netball game for Sports Relief with the netball girls, the Roses. And I got there and I was so nervous and I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I can't look too ambitious. Otherwise people are going to say I wanted too much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too intense. And the girl said, why? What is wrong with being intense? Mm-hmm. What is wrong with being ambitious? What is wrong with being competitive? You're here for a reason. You're here to be someone, to take up space. You're here to have a meaning. People want to see you and they want to see you live up to your name. So don't make yourself small just for perception. What people will judge you for is if you're not being genuine. Yes. So be the most intense you that you can be. And the moment you kind of try to be a certain way and appear a certain way, that disconnect is never going to work. But with me, with my ambition, I always, I can't hide it. And I always say it's a good thing and it's also a bad thing. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing. So when I'm focused and I'm working and I'm with people that I love and I'm going after something, I'm really ambitious. But sometimes when you don't get what you want, that ambition will feel like lightning is striking you in the throat. It will just feel like, it's like, I want something, why can't I get it? And it just feels like, it's like, you get frustrated.
Yeah.
And so being ambitious, but in a healthy way, so it's a journey that I had to learn, because you can also be a brat. When you're too ambitious, you expect things. You start to think, why is that person and not me? Why not me? You start to be ungrateful. You start to assume that everything's supposed to come to you. And that's what I feel like, there are good and bad sides about it. But I am, me and my sister have conversations about this. Like me and Mutu would sit and we just text each other ambition. Cause you see something and you go, I want it, but you don't get it. And you have to deal with it. You just have to deal with it.
Mm. Do you ever listen to Gary Vaynerchuk? Gary V?
No. Gary V, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. His surname was Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
I must have read it with some African accent or something. Vaynerchuk. Vaynerchuk.
Gary V. He talks. I'm always listening to Gary V. He talks about sort of short term, like move with speed, ambition, go after everything you want with everything you have. But long-term patience is what you need.
Yes.
Like go after it like you have to get it tomorrow, but at the same time have the patience to understand that it might take a while. And that's how you do it every day, right?
Yeah, and kind of be along the thing with I would say ambition and going after what you want and always being on the go. At some moments, I felt this a lot of the times, you miss some key points and some key moments in your life. Mm-hmm. So the things that you are supposed to enjoy, the journey, the little wins, you overlook them because you just want this bigger goal. You're just going for what you're going. And so then that's what things that lead to you not being happy, not feeling fulfilled, not feeling satisfied, because you miss the small moments. You miss congratulating yourself for overcoming something that you probably wouldn't have done 2 years ago.
Mm.
And it creates holes because you're just chasing after this one thing. And to be patient means taking your time to get to a certain point. And once you take your time, you can appreciate certain things. You can appreciate steps. You can appreciate moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a balance, isn't it? Between, like Eckhart Tolle talks about being present as much as possible. Don't get in the past, you know, worrying about past things or worrying about future thing, what's going to happen in the future.
Yes.
Present. And you can, if you're fully, fully present in any one moment and you're sort of in tune with the flow of life and you're going with the flow of life, that sort of leads to an innate sort of happiness. And, but the balance, like, and I love that. And I love that idea. And it's like, go with the flow of life and experience things in the moment, in the present. But at the same time, Tony Robbins, for example, will talk about, so rather than say, okay, say it's a stream and you're flowing down this,
yeah,
letting it go where it takes you. That's very Eckhart Tolle. But then Tony Robbins will say, get in that stream, you're in your boat, and you get out a massive oar and you, what's the word I'm looking for? You steer it in the exact.
You row. Yeah.
The direction that you want to go in.
Yes.
If you want to go over there, you have that oar and you row into that direction. So it's like,
yes.
Somehow finding the balance between going with the flow of life and rowing to the exact point you want to be in.
It's, I think also it comes down to personality, honestly, because I can't go with the flow. If you told me to go with the flow, I'd walk out. I'm like, what flow? No. Why would you want? I'm not even a chill person anyway. I'm not going to go with the, and whose flow? Your flow or my flow or their flow? Do you know what I mean? It just causes, just, I'm not a go with the flow person. But Tony also says, where energy goes, focus flows. I'm saying it wrong. Where focus goes, energy flows. I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what he, so for me, if I am concentrating on something and that's what I want, I'm going to go with the flow, but row in that direction. So you kind of combine two. But I'm never going to be chilled about it. If I'm chilled about something, you know I'm not into it. I'm not invested.
Interesting.
I'm not. I'm being there for the purpose of, I need to be there. And somebody told me this will be good. This is a good move if I'm going with the flow. But if I'm ambitious and I make mistakes and I get frustrated about making mistakes and I cry all the time. But that's because that's where my focus is and that's where I'm giving all my energy. Mm. And I'm not going with the flow. I am steering this flow. I put logs two steps behind me so that all the energy can flow where I'm flowing. Yeah. I've put in place what I need to do so that the stream can flow the direction that I want. But I also think it comes down to personalities, because people can be quite relaxed and chilled, but still ambitious and still have a goal and still want to achieve things, but they're not going to make, they will be half cup full, half cup empty. There are people like that. And it's a personality. Some people are just relaxed in that way or just chilled. Mm. There's 0% chillness in my system. I don't have that bone of chill. I really wish, do you know, this is the thing that I do wish I have. I wish I would get to a place and not be excited and be like, yo, what's up? Mm. Like, that would be my dream, because if I get somewhere and I'm excited, I'm like, oh my God! I'm going ballistic, because like, I have no chill in me at all. But that's not my personality.
Mm. And so, We're both fans of Tony Robbins and Jay Shetty, right? Mm. So for anyone who doesn't know, Tony Robbins is a life coach,
performance coach
from America. Jay Shetty is a guy who sort of gave up his life at one point, the life that he had at the time, and went off to become a monk and lived as a monk for however many years, and then decided to dedicate his life to the teachings of the monk way, to how people can apply it to their lives without having to become a monk themselves, just using the same mindset.
Yes.
This is interesting, like, just with what you were just saying, I think this is where they sort of combine quite well. They talk about a lot of similar things, in that Tony Robbins, right, he talks about having clarity of what you want. Be very clear and very specific. Like, it's not enough to say, I want to be successful one day. It's not even enough to say, I want to be a successful dancer one day. It's like,
yes,
what kind of dancer, on what year, what does success mean to you? Is it a certain amount of money?
Mm-hmm.
Is it winning competitions? Is it being in a show?
Yeah.
If it's a show, which show? Which part in which show? And what has to
happen? What are you doing to achieve that? Yeah.
Be very specific about that. You know, be clear, crystal clear in
goal.
Your mind of where you want to be. And then Jay Shetty also talks a lot about to your point of what you were saying about, if you're just chilled, it sort of means You don't care. You know when you've got this energy, when you're dedicating yourself to something that you really care about. Jay Shetty talks a lot about that, about just sometimes we're on a path where we think we've got to be on that path and we think we're doing the right
thing.
We think we're following this way. And actually, like, we're making excuses and putting blocks in our way, and that's why it's not working. And we're starting to get woe is me about it. But at the same time, the truth is probably, actually, you don't want that enough. Because when you do want it, you know you want
it. And you will say it.
Go and see it. And you, it's like you're saying, you become like, because you're in that zone.
No, I think I had the same thing, because I started presenting now daytime television.
Yeah.
And one of the producers said to me, she said, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to present and I want to host. And she said, what? And I was like, because it's me, of course. I was like, everything. I was like, everything. I don't see the purpose of having like limits. Don't limit me, because I won't limit you. I might fail. And I'm okay to fail. Failure for me is absolutely fine. But I need to try everything to know what I'm not good at and what I'm not passionate at. And then she said to me, if you are not clear and you don't tell people what it is that you want specifically, when, how, what your timeline is, people will start filling out the blanks for themselves. And usually it'll never be in your favor. Mm. Usually it'll always be like, if I work on dancing with Kev and I'm like, but I also like dancing with Marius, if I'm not clear about that, they'll be like, she said she only likes working with Kev. That's what it looks like to me. To me, she's smiling when she's turning left. She doesn't smile when she turns left with Marius. So they will fill up their own imaginations based on their own personal problems and insecurities about what they think works for you, if you don't come out and make that clear about what you want.
Yeah, that's great. And so
insane, isn't it? Insane, isn't it? Right. It kind of makes you go, should I have to scream at the top of my voice? But if I do that, people are gonna say I'm desperate and I want it too much. But I'm not, but I do.
But if you and therefore if you don't go for it and you don't scream it at the top of your lungs, everyone else is gonna make
don't care
about what you want. Yeah, exactly. They're gonna make their own opinions. So what got you into the likes of Tony Robbins and Jay Shetty? And you know, how did you discover it? And then what are your sort of biggest takeaways from them? What, you know, what's changed for you? How did they help you? So much.
I actually have his book right there. I have like books of him right there. I think at that point, what was happening? I had just danced strictly with Graham, and I just started The Greatest Dancer, with like the first season. And my husband was like, there's this guy, his name is Tony. I feel like I'm stuck a little bit in my life. I've followed you to this country. And you're doing well, but I feel stuck. I feel like I don't have anywhere to go. And we hadn't really communicated what we were both feeling at that point. And for me, I didn't feel stuck. I just felt like I had no fire anymore. There was nothing that I really was willing to fight for, to come out of my comfort zone for. I knew I wanted to win Strictly, but in my mind, a girl who looks like me from South Africa would never. Do you know what I mean? And it's not about what I look like. That's not what it is. I just assumed Strictly has never been won by a South African person who came from South Africa to Germany, who wasn't a world champ, I was like, I would never, ever, ever be capable of ever winning, ever. I was upset. It wasn't ever going to happen. And I wanted to, but I wasn't willing to do anything about it. I wanted to win, but I wasn't willing to do anything about it. And Marcus was like, I know how you feel. I know you're really quiet about how you feel. And I feel like, just come with me and you might change your view on life. Just try one day. And I was like, I don't want somebody telling me how to think. I know how to think. Oh, this is going to be so boring. Yeah. And we got there. on the first day, and it was at, I don't remember, the Oval? Was it the Oval? No. Anyway, some EXO. And it was so packed, but people were just, they were just in, they loved him. They loved him. And the presentation and everything of how it was done was amazing. And you get all these speakers before Tony and they talk about him and they're like, Tony's coming. Tony's amazing. Tony's done this. Tony's... And I'm like, who's this Tony guy? Come on, this is so boring. Why are we still here? Then he came out and the whole place rocked. It was almost like a rock star had just walked it. Like I had never seen anything like this. He was like, do you know what I mean? He was, everyone just, I'm going to swear, they lost their shit. Like they just, they lost it. And I was like, why? And he literally said, let's just dance. Let's first start off by dancing. And he had his sticks. And then you just go with the rhythm. And I'm like, okay, I'm loving this. Yeah. And then he's like, jump up and down and pump your air up. Boom. And then he's like, make your move. And it's your move. And this move is going to initiate you. And he's like, if you change your physiology, you change your mentality. And all of a sudden, someone who is going, I don't want this. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going, oh, yes, Tony. Now I'm the one screaming louder than anyone in the whole venue. And I think just from that, from just the first words that came out of his mouth, I was like, okay, great. This is good. Then he said, sit down. No, he said, you're not going to sit down. You're going to stand for the hour and we're going to talk and you're going to listen. I was like, I'm tired. I'm tired from the jumping up and down. And he was like, no, you'll be captivated. And he gave all these lectures and every single thing that he mentioned about focus and feeling like you want to take your life to the next step, but not knowing how, then giving you the steps of what is the next step, then giving you the idea of what are the steps that you need to do when you feel sad, when you feel overwhelmed. He literally, it felt like he was filling in the gaps that I had in my heart and in my head. They just weren't connected. I hadn't told my heart what my head wanted and vice versa. They hadn't communicated. And he gave me this opening of the body will do whatever the mind tells it to do. The body will go through anything that the mind tells it to do. But you need to have a strong mind. You need to train your mind. You need to do fitness. He said he wakes up every morning and he jumps into a cold swimming pool because that wakes him up in the morning. You know, it gives his brain a shock. Like, we go. Mm-hmm. This is the time we go. He goes in the gym and he goes every single day for the same amount of hours. Not because it's good for him, but that tells his brain, go. And if he can control his brain and his mind, his body will follow, then he can control anything. He can control people around him. He can observe. He can observe while in a situation. He can observe being outside of situations. It takes away conflict. It takes away frustration. It takes away your emotions and what you feel inside. And I was just like, where has this guy been all my life? And then there was one thing he said, by the end of 2 days, we're going to walk across fire barefoot and you're going to do it. Yeah. You're going to do it. It's not going to hurt and you're going to love it. He's like, but you need to take the steps that I give you for this whole workshop for us to get to the point. You see the fire and you don't run away from it, but you go, I'm going to walk across this fire and it's not going to even feel like anything. And I'm going to feel amazing. I'm going to feel like the best thing ever. And I like tomorrow, so I was like, what is this? Is this a cult? You trying to kill me? I'm not into this. I don't want to walk on fire. I left Africa. I've been out the danger zone. I don't need to be walking in fire now. And he was like, and I stuck with it. And there are moments where you confess your insecurities, you confess your goals. Sometimes the scariest thing in life is just to open up and tell a stranger what it is that you want, what your goal is. So intimidating, because we read on Instagram all these quotes, and one of the quotes is, if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. Mm-hmm. But you have to acknowledge them and word them. You have to word them. You have to find the words to say them and to say them out loud, to say them to a room of strangers that you've never met before. You don't know who's there. And then to scream at the top of your voice and have your move and have your keywords. Say that I'm enough. I'm brilliant. I'm ambitious. I got this. I'm going to survive. I'll make it through a divorce, a death. You make it. You will make it. You have your affirmations and you say that. And I remember it being like the second night and I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm flying now. Like I feel like I'm, and you're not on anything. You're not on any narcotics. You know, you're just on word. You're just on his words and loving it. And I saw the fire and you walk towards the fire and everybody's barefoot and it's everyone. It's like 2,000, 3,000 people. And we're all walking towards this fire. And you say your words, you say your words. And I walk across the fire and I felt nothing.
Yeah.
I felt nothing, yeah. Nothing. And I was like, I'm not sure that happened because it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
Mars is like, what? I was like, I want to go again. And Mars is like, wait, that wasn't a part of the deal. I was like, no, I didn't feel anything. I want to feel something. I want to know that this is real. So I went back again. But this time when I went back, I hadn't activated my words. I hadn't checked myself. So I did it the second time and my feet burnt.
No way.
But my feet were like bubbling and they were like blistered, but only because my mind had not taken the steps that they needed to make my body aware that this is fire, this is gonna hurt, and you're doing it the second time. I hadn't taken the steps. I was like, I wanna go again. That wasn't real.
This is so great to hear because, so I've told you, I did the same process in 2018. I did the 4-day Tony Robbins course and we walked across the fire and we did the yeah. whole the same experience that you had where you go in and think, I was like, oh God, I don't know if I like this. But like this, all these Americans in front of me jumping up and down dancing. I came here to get away from dancing. I was something else I'm looking for. Like, I don't know if this is me. And then you sort of allow yourself to go with it and suddenly it's like, yeah. I love this. And then I walked across that fire and like you said, I was in that zone. I was in that frame of mind. I was saying the things that, you know, you're supposed to say. I marched across that fire. And at the end, yeah, I hadn't felt a thing. And since that day, like, I mean, from the 4 days, I was like, that's one of the most incredible yeah. 4 days of my life. And I've always had this tiny, tiny thought in my head that went, I just hope that they were really hot coals and all of that, and that, and that I wasn't being conned. So you've just proved to me that they were actually hot. It's just
it's fire.
The mindset shift.
No, honestly, and the mind is so powerful as to what it can convince you you can do and what it can talk you out of. And yeah. the mind as well has many voices. Mm-hmm. As many voices. There's so many voices within your mind that go for it. But then something goes, you're gonna burn. And another voice goes, you could do this like 2-3, like just wait a little bit. There's so many voices. But if you can control that whole community of voice in your head and just prep yourself to do that, there is nothing that you cannot do if you, like, there's nothing you can't achieve if you don't set your mind to it. There's mm-hmm. literally... We walked on fire. The moment I did it the second time, I was burning. I was literally burning. I couldn't even put shoes back on. Yeah. But I felt like the Hulk. I was like, I'm a Hulkina. I don't know what. I was like, there is nothing, nothing I cannot achieve if I take the steps, the necessary steps to achieving the goal. And sometimes it's not fighting the fight. Sometimes the steps that you need to achieve is just chilling. Mm. It's just observing. It's one thing he said I really loved, and I think you did really well, and I really loved it. He said, if he worked in business, we were having a business chat, and I remember watching you talk on It Takes Two. I know you had did this, but I hadn't done it. And then I did the next year and I was like, oh, that's what Kevin was doing. Mm. And like, like he says, If you have this product, this job, this person that you have to talk about, you need to believe in this person 160%. Mm-hmm. But believing in it is not enough. You need to convince other people why this is the product that they need. This is the person they need to vote for. This is the relationship. This is the champ. You need to find the ways to convince everyone that this product might not be perfect. It might not shine like all the other but this is the product they need, and they need to love. And sometimes it's just as simple as sitting there and looking. And I was like, and I love that. I love that. I clapped and I was like, oh, okay, I see. And I took that into, definitely from that moment, I took that into my Strictly life, career, greatest dancer, everything. I took just those principles that we learned. And I still have my diaries and my journals. I took them in and then I've applied them, and it's worked. And whenever I feel like I've lost it, because you can lose it, it's almost like a muscle. You need to really train that muscle. I can always do a workshop on Facebook, or read one of the journals, or I can read a book. I love reading books, but sometimes I get like, this is slow, because I don't read fast in my head. And it's his voice, you know, it's that voice that goes like this. And so I always need to clock back and just, and clock back. So I listen to his podcast. Whenever I feel like, this is an instant, whenever you're in the press and you're having a scandal or whatever, a splash, whatever, I need to listen to a podcast sometimes, because it can feel like the world is against you. It can feel like people have an opinion on you. But there was one podcast that he did, and it was about perception. And he's like, sometimes you have to think that things aren't happening to you, they're happening for you. And that really changed my mindset about how I deal with public perception, criticism, how I deal with the press. And you think that sometimes people write stories about you, and it's not because they're against you. Sometimes they just write stories because their boss is saying, you need to write something about that show, about that person, like they're under pressure, so they have to do what they need to do. But they need to do what they need to do to survive, because for them, that's a way of life. But I need to think in my head, that's not something that is happening to me. Yes, they attack me, blah, 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 attack, attack, attack. But it's also happening for me. And it's my responsibility to find that person, their purpose, or their reason. And so if someone gossips or says something that I don't like, I need to not attack, because I can, what you say? I can be that. But sometimes you just go, this is not happening to me.
Yeah.
It's happening for me. And so stuff like that, where you can, whatever he says, podcast, books, whatever, there's always a word, a quote, a story that matches with that situation. And there are always steps on how to handle yourself.
I think that, like you said, the mind is so powerful and can dictate everything that is going to happen with you. And it's up to you what you fill your mind with going forward. You know, whether it's a kind of positivity, you know, any kind of way of thinking, whatever it needs. And it's up to you. And I just think, because there'll be some people who will be reluctant to look at anything like this, Tony Robbins, Jay Shetty, you know, any of these guys, Gary Vee, you know, whatever. Yeah. And we'll put it down to, oh, it's a load of nonsense. Oh, what, I need a coach for life. I think loads of people have done life before. Do you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. But
yeah.
But for me, and it sounds like for you too, like since I really started pursuing this kind of information, and to learn this kind of stuff, and more importantly, apply it, like everything changed.
Yes.
I don't think it's a coincidence that in 2018, like I was saying to you before we started this podcast, before I went to the Tony Robbins course, I was a broken man. I had things going on, you know, with my life. I was at my lowest point in my life. I felt like I'd completely lost myself. I went to this Tony Robbins course, I have a couple of other sort of mentors that I talk to, and came out of that experience feeling very different and feeling more myself than I had in a long time. Because I think it's not about changing who you have to be. Actually, Jay Shetty and Tony Robbins both talk about this. It's not about trying to be a different person. Mm. It's actually getting really in touch with who you are. And like you were saying earlier, being genuine, not trying to pretend for everyone else. Yeah. Like Jay Shetty says, sometimes you fall into the trap of like, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I'm who I think I am because of all these.
And things that happen to us.
Yeah. And once I'd sort of worked through all that and done that Tony Robbins thing, I felt completely different. I felt like back to being myself. Mm. It was like, you're not broken. You just need to get, you need to throw off a load of this stuff and get back to who you are and what you really want. And then in 2018, won Strictly. You went to Tony Robbins in 2019. You were saying, you know, you and Marius, I felt a bit lost. You're a bit sort of, you didn't want to scream it from the rooftops that, you know, what you'd like to do. You went through that process. You walked across the fire, started pursuing all this stuff. 2019, you won Strictly. I just think it's coincidence a bit because, and I'm not.
I did it again in 2020. I did it again with Bill in 2020.
You did the you did Tony Robbins again, and then and then won again.
Yeah. So he has, he does them online. He does them online. He did one in January. It was called The Comeback. Then I did one during Strictly. We have friends Tommy and Jess, and Maris. They did it as well, and they got like these it's wood, like a placard. I don't know how to say it. It's basically something like this. It's like a little box, you know, like the Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And we did what, and when, now this is different. You don't walk across fire. They send you like this wood that you can break. And whenever you feel like you've overcome it and you set your mind, you just chop it. And it should be impossible, but you actually do it. Yeah. So I did it. Yeah. Every year.
And then you won Strictly again. You became the first one to back to back. No one's ever done it before. In how many seasons? How many seasons has been 17 or something? Like no one had
ever. Yeah.
And you achieved it. And now you like you continue to strive. You're doing everything. Like you're like, you know, you said, I want to do everything. And you are. Not coincidence. It didn't just happen. You'll think, oh, you know, that person got lucky, or it's because of this, or they're in the right place at the right time, or whatever. For me, it doesn't work like that. And I think it's no coincidence.
Yeah.
You've done all this work. And now
like you said something there by like how, what you fill your mind with. And we spoke about this again. There's a thing that Tony lets you do. He lets you actually visualize your past. And every day you meditate yourself as a child and then how life would have been different if certain things used to would have changed and how certain things used to be different. I remember with a pattern of mine when I was doing my visualization or going back. And every year on Strictly, week 9, I would get exhausted. I would be physically exhausted. I couldn't anymore. And week 9 is like after Blackpool. And that's when you have to kick it up a notch because that's 2 dancers now. Now you have to literally be 2 dancers. And I remember with Graham, I was just tired. So I had nothing to give him. I really had nothing. Johnny, same thing. I really had nothing and I wanted to so bad, but mentally I just wasn't strong enough. Again, there was such a disconnect with what I wanted, but what I was willing to do. And I had to reflect on that moment. So in 2019, when it got to week 9, now I was aware. I was very much aware of my old patterns. Mm. And that was Blackpool. And I was like, right, OT, your body's tired. But you've got the skills now to know. Now this is when we kick it up a notch. This is the moment we go for gold. You know, it doesn't matter whether you win or not, but you know that you cannot allow your body to control everything. And I just remember from Blackpool feeling like the moment I decided that nothing was going to make me feel tired. I felt more creative because now I was working from a place of, I know everybody else is tired. I know this. Now I gotta go. And I'm not tired because it's all in the head. Even today, I don't like allow any of my celebs to actually say that they're tired. I don't allow them to acknowledge. They can do it. outside at home with their friends and their families and whatever. With me, I'm like, no, we don't say I'm exhausted, I'm tired. We don't. You come in, you change your mindset. You say, I want to be there. I love to be there. I'm not tired. It hurts, but that's life. Life hurts. If it didn't hurt, then we wouldn't be alive. And we go for it. We work nonstop until we don't have to work, because I want to change their mindset. And I know if I'm tired, there's no way I can motivate you. Yeah. And a big part of our job is to motivate and inspire and to encourage them. But it takes so much out of you. Mm. You're drained. You're like, how many times can I tell you you're doing? How many times can I clap for you? But once I changed my mentality and my mindset about it, it just came out. It just, honestly, it felt like, because of Tony and the steps, and he was like, change your patterns. It wasn't a thing anymore. I didn't feel it anymore. I was like, now let's go. This should feel like week one. Mm. You're just as excited. You're just as inspired. This is the first time you've made it out of Blackpool. You're going to go into musicals. It's semifinals. Wow, two dances, three dances. It's hard, but that's great. Because once you make it on the other side, it's going to be worth it. Yes, you've sacrificed it, but it's amazing. And just change that mindset. Come, and knowing I'm tired, let me switch. Let me initiate myself, move myself differently so I can switch my mind. And that just made the world of a difference. Same with Bill. Same thing. Bill, I would say, I'm going to sit down for 5 minutes and he would fall asleep and pass out. And I'd be like, wake up, change your body, wake up. He's like, I'm sick. I was like, wake up. Wake up and you're excited to dance. Say it with me. And he would say it. And then we'd end up, like, this would be at 6 o'clock and we'd end up training until 11 o'clock in the evening because just of that mindset change.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's so interesting. After I'd done it I know exactly what you're talking about getting to that stage in Strictly when you're just exhausted and you feel like you haven't got much. Yeah. And like just physically, emotionally, mentally, like you feel all over the place by that stage. But then my 2018 year with Stace, she was very like, oh God, you know, like early on, she was like, I just got a 4. I know that I'm not very good. I don't want to go home yet. So we might have to like kick our hours up a bit. And we started like, you know, 8 in the morning till 10. Yeah. And it just became completely normal. Whereas you think, and even when you're in sort of week 10, quarterfinals like that, you're just going 8 in the morning till 10 at night. Whereas before, you almost think that'd be impossible at that stage.
Yeah.
It'd be impossible, and therefore it is impossible. But once you start, no, I can do this, and I'm going to enjoy doing this. It changes everything. Yeah,
it stops being a job. It stops being, because I remember with my year with Danny, and I always say if there was one thing I would change, I wish I had Danny today. Do you know what I mean? To just redo everything, because he got me at a point where I wasn't mature enough in my head to kind of do what I needed to do with him. Not change the result, but the journey. Whereas with Danny, it was like, we were at the top, so we needed to go. Like, you can't, there's no room for failure. We needed to go. And it was great. But I feel like had I changed, I always say to him, had I met him now, I would have made him rest more. The fact that we stayed at 10 wouldn't have been because we needed to prove something. It would have been simply because we wanted to be there and we were just having a good time. So we didn't stop to enjoy the jokes and that, like, now we're best friends. But then we were so busy working, we didn't even stop to get to know each other. I was like, I don't know who you are, but you're gonna dance. Yeah. And I just wish I could redo just that whole journey, because mentally I'm in a different space to help him as well be Danny. I could have changed something. I don't know, but it would have been such a different person, a different feeling of what he got out of Strictly as well.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about like with, because now we're talking about Strictly, in terms of like choreographing, do you have a particular process for putting that? Do you enjoy choreographing and do you have a particular process for putting the routines together?
Routines, yes. Yes. So I love, I have to get my emotions out because I'm a very emotional person. First, this is my thing. It's really weird. Nobody else does it. I need to sit for an hour and write what I'm feeling in that moment.
Okay.
And then once I'm done with my girl stuff, my emotional stuff, once I'm done with that and I've journalized it, it's gone. It's gone, right? So now then I start to work. Before I start to work on any choreography, and this changed with Bill. But with Kelvin, was I got a glimpse of it, but not really. I need to research. I need to have an in-depth awareness of what I'm talking about. What is the point? And what am I trying to say? I hate choreographies when I see just a lot of a lot of content, but no message, no purpose. Yeah. There's no storyline. There's no emotion. There's no purpose, and there's no connection. And I think with shows like Strictly, people need to feel something. People need to relate to something. People need to understand something. So we have movie week because people are familiar with the movies, and that's why they are so successful, because people know what they're going to see.
Yeah,
they can relate to it. A lot of my choreographies, I don't know why, but they're always about breakups. That's like my thing. They call me the breakup girl. Like all the time. They go, are we breaking up this week? I'm like, you know it. There's no romantic waltz from my side. We're breaking up in those waltz. They're like, cha-cha. I'm like, no, I tell him I don't want him. They're like, Summer, he tells me he doesn't want it. So every day there's a breakup, because I feel like people can relate to breakups, because everybody breaks up, whether it's in a marriage, a friendship, or a relationship. Mm. And so I, with Bill, what I learned is that he's an actor. Kelvin was an actor. Give them something that they can come out of themselves and become. So, you know, you go into this meeting and they kind of suggest concepts and music and whatever it's going to be. And I had to learn to not be a control freak, because I love to control everything. Concepts, songs, dress. Like, I used to control everything. But now I'm like, I need to allow people to do their job. Because then if they do their job, I can do my job. And in all honesty, you're not going to control all of the music choices. You're not going to control all of the concepts. You're not going to control which number you go first. You close the show. You can't. The only thing I can control is the choreography. So I focus on that. And the thing is, every time I ask them, I ask myself, what is the purpose? What is the point of this? What is the story? What is the storyline? Who are you in this dance? What is my character? What is your character? Are we going to reenact a movie? Are we going to get an inspiration from a musical? Are we going to get an inspiration from a book? So every week, there is something that we've either seen or we've read or is a normal life situation. And so once I have that in my head, I kind of have the storyline. So like week two with Bill, we did Dr. Doolittle, but not the one with Eddie Murphy. We did the other one with Robbie Jr.
Something. Oh, Robert Downey.
Downey Jr. The guy. Yeah. Yeah. Iron Man. Iron Man was Dr. Doolittle. Iron Man. Yeah. But for that, I needed to watch the movie. So Bill and I sat for 2 hours during rehearsals and we watched the movie and we took pictures and we took moments from the movie. And we could kind of relate. Bill knew his character. He knew who he had to be. He knew who he had to be when during the dance. Then I have the story in my head. He has the story in his head. Now comes the steps. Because he can't do everything, right? He can't do everything. So then I pick 4 or 5 moves that I know that he will be able to work and do really, really, really well. 3 of the steps are going to be things that we've done before, and 2 of them are going to be things that I introduce, and maybe the 6th one is something that I'm willing to fight for. I'm willing to teach him. Now we're going to do Bachugaras, and I'm going to teach you the technique of a Bachugara. It's something crazy like that. I'll risk that. And so what I'm doing is I'm making him comfortable, because now he doesn't have to think about the steps because he can do it. I'm giving him 2 new things that he feels like he's learning something. And then I'm giving him 1 thing that's challenging him. So he's getting everything, but he's still got some elements that he is comfortable with doing and still acting out. Because at the end of the day, people don't care what steps you're doing. They just see your dance. They don't know. They just want to be touched. They want to be entertained. They want to feel loved. They want to feel moved. They don't care what you're doing. And nobody cares that I've done like the same lift for 16 years. They're like, that looks impressive with Graham. That looks impressive with Johnny. That looks impressive with Anthony. They don't care. They don't know the difference because they've seen 15 other people dance before.
I did a fall away whisk in nearly every routine I've ever done.
We call it the Kevin Clifton. It's not even the fall away. Listen, we're going to do the Kevin Clifton now. Come on. It works. You're moving around the floor, but it works. Do you know what I mean? And no one really cares.
No.
The viewers at home, they have no connection to the world that we're from. They just are watching on a Saturday night with their family and they want to be entertained and feel something. And then once I have the steps, I'll do it on a Sunday. I'll choreograph. I'll film it. I'll do it in bits. And I'll always choreograph. I choreograph from the perspective of a man. So if I do it with Marius, Marius is the woman and I'm the man. So mm-hmm. I choreograph as the boy. Okay. And so I'm like, this is too difficult. Some things are too difficult for me to teach. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't put them in. And some things I don't think are entertaining, or they might be impressive and oh my gosh, this has never been done before. But the effort is not there. The effort is not worth the effect. So I'll take that out. And so I'll put a routine that has a beginning, a middle, an end. He can do the steps. There's a story. He can act and he can feel confident in. And we're not going to fight because I'm not crying anymore over 8 steps forward. I'm not doing that. And so by the time it's Sunday, I have a routine that is complete, that I'm also willing to change. And also what I do with every single step, I have 2 or 3 alternative steps that I have, that if this doesn't work or doesn't look good, I'll change it.
Yeah.
Then I'll go in on a Monday and I'll teach the whole thing because I know he's not gonna remember it. It's not gonna be there. So Monday basically is just one of those days where you're like, let's just do it to do it.
Yeah.
But by Tuesday, you should be able to get it. With all the changes that we do. And then Wednesday is my most important day because Wednesday is the day I break things down and I call it drill day. So I break the routines up in 3. We do the beginning and we drill it. And you're going to do the routine without me. So you do it by yourself. You're dancing by yourself. I'm sitting there with my coffee and my book and I'm counting the steps and you're going to hold the stick. You're going to repeat it until you don't have to think anymore. I'm going to add in a few technical stuff that we didn't do the week before just to show improvement. I'm going to work on your arms. I'm going to work on your lines. Then when part one is done, we do the same thing with part two. Then I combine part one and part two. Then we do part three. Then it goes part two and part three. And then you do the whole thing. So by Wednesday, you should be able to do the routine with the technique from beginning to end. Doesn't mean it's perfect, but still you can do it by yourself. So if I'm not in the competition and somebody else comes in, you can still be able to do it by yourself because you know the steps, you know them, they're in your bones, they're in your blood.
Yeah.
And then Thursday we repeat, but I only do halves. So we only do part one and part two and part two and part three. We repeat until you feel confident. And I had to learn not to do an 8 to 10 on a Thursday because they're tired for Friday. So then Thursday is a little bit of a shorter day so that they can actually go home and sleep on it. And that's it.
And that's
it's a long process, but like it works. Yeah, there's a lot that goes in. Because I mean I'm pretty slow when I'm teaching because I love to use analogies. I love to use shapes. I love to use situation. I'm completely envious of people who can walk in at 10 and leave at 6 and say they've got it and go home and sleep and have a life. Like, I am so, like, I wish I'm so invested. I'm not going to stop thinking about it until Sunday. That's where my energy is. That's where my flow is going to go. I'm going to look at you when you're sitting. I'm like, don't sit like that because that's not going to help me in the cha-cha 3 weeks down the line. Like I'm so invested in it. It becomes it becomes me. It becomes everything and all that I think about. And I love that I don't have to do that because it's work, but I wish one day I would be like, and you're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They dance it. And I'm like, let's go out for dinner and have fun. Yeah. I don't get to do that because yeah. I'm like, why is your toe moving that way?
Yeah. And then you're lying in bed at night thinking, there's that step that actually, and it's, toe. It's Wednesday night. And you're thinking, there's that step.
Yes.
Why didn't I do it like that? That could work.
Yes.
But and then you have to try and stop changing and changing and changing in bed and obsessing over every little.
Yes.
Thing. Yeah, I know.
Yes. But I used to be really different. Well now you know failure to prepare is preparing to fail. Mm-hmm. But I used to be different. I used to walk in and start doing technique day one.
Right.
And I'm like, you're going to do it like we're at the world championships and we're going to do the technique. And what it did was, one, waste time. Two, it's not a world championship. This is an entertainment show on BBC primetime. It's not, we're not doing Rumba in the Jungle with Brian Watson. We're not doing that. But two, what it did was I didn't leave enough time for them to practice it enough to feel confident. They had the technique, which is great. Nobody cares if you have the technique or not. No one knows what technique is in terms of not voting for you. Do you know what I mean? Nobody's going to be like, they didn't do a heel step, so I'm not going to vote. Because the shot sometimes don't even show feet. Yeah. And you're like, I'm working on the heel step. And people are like, what? I didn't even see toes there. Yeah. And so it just would leave room for, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't feel secure. Even for them, there was nothing for them to relate to. Mm. Like, I did a samba with Graham and it was about cricket and he loved it so much because it was about cricket and we did a waltz and it was like his grandma's waltz and he loved it. We did Thriller. He loves to be Michael Jackson and loved it. But stuff that we did like a jive of us going to the moon and being astronauts. He was like, what? What? Why are we on the moon? Why are we wearing pink in the moon? Like to, you know what I mean? Like that makes no, it didn't connect to him, even in his head. And so you could see it. You could clearly see it.
Yeah. By the way, there should have been a big pro wrestling number with Anthony Ogogo.
We didn't last long enough for there to be anything.
So obviously everyone knows I'm a master.
We did.
You did boxing.
No, we did.
No,
we did Eye of the Tiger and we were like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Boom.
Boxing.
And we were boxing.
Yeah. But yeah, now he's this like famous pro wrestler in America. And I'm a big wrestling fan. And he just came on my screen. I was like,
amazing.
Anthony Ogogo, but bigger. Like, yeah, he's doing amazing.
Like he ate spinach. He ate Popeye.
But look, obviously all of this stuff to do with your mindset, your process, you know, but obviously it's really worked. I mean, you've been absolutely smashing it, I mean, the whole time, but especially in the last couple of years.
Thank you.
We want to see more OTs, you know, we want to see more of this. I wanted to ask you, this was question two, by the way, that I had on my list, but
yeah.
You talked about so much other stuff and it went in all these directions and I wanted to talk about all that mindset stuff. We just got there like quicker than I'd planned, but like before we talk about your sort of future projects to finish it off, I'm genuinely interested when I look at, and I'm not particularly saying anything about Strictly, I'm talking about ballroom and Latin dancing in general, the
competition world,
you know, when you go to Blackpool, it looks like quite a white thing to do. Like it doesn't look, I mean, maybe it's changed in the last few years. I don't know. I haven't been around the competition scene, but it doesn't.
No, it hasn't.
That diverse. Do you have any thoughts on exactly why that could be, whether it's a cultural thing, whether it's opportunity, whether it's, you know, you talked about Rumba in the Jungle and how what a big influence that had on you because it was in South Africa. Is it just, you know, seeing it? What do you think?
There's so many things. I think firstly, the good thing about Strictly, the actual good thing, is that it is so diverse that people don't think about it anymore. it's so people don't think, like, for me to say, oh, I didn't think someone who looked like me would wear, like, people don't, people go, what do you mean? People who look like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like what do you, when you say people that look like me, what are you referring to? Yeah. Exactly. Like, what are you talking? And that's what the show has done. The show has just opened everybody's mindset to so many things that we don't even see them anymore as it being something that people don't talk about. The fact that every single year we have someone with a disability, but we don't even talk about it. And like, nobody mentioned that JJ had a disability. Everybody was talking about the same sex. And eventually it's going to be something that we don't talk about anymore. And it's got, so what Strictly does in that sense is it opens up general public, millions, it opens our mindset up. With the competition world, I think that's a whole complete other world, and it shouldn't be that way. I think one, it's a money thing. It really, really is a money thing. I feel like there should be a lot more competitions that are going around the world. Mm-hmm. All of the competitions are in Europe or America or Asia. Yeah. Not a lot in international with great couples in Africa or in South America or in Australia. So that means me who, or OT, baby OT or another OT from South Africa who can't afford to even buy dance shoes. Mm-hmm. How am I going to afford a plane ticket? How am I going to afford money to even go to the airport, a dress, lessons? Like, you can't afford it. Mm. That's the thing. You just simply can't afford it. So the couples don't go. But also when you do go, you haven't had the training that people in England have, or not England, so in Europe have had to actually make a story, to make it far. They are South Africans and probably people in South America who go to the championships, but we're out first round. Because the standard is also not good enough there. But I also think, like we said before, dance is a natural thing in South America, in Africa. It's a natural, we grow up dancing. We go to the street, the music is playing. We're like, da, 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 da. Everyone is dancing. In our weddings, we don't walk down the aisle, we dance down the aisle. Like, when I had to dance with my husband, he's like, why am I learning choreography to get married? I don't get it. But it's something so natural that we do. And I assume in South America, you hear salsa playing in the streets. You don't even think about it. You just move, your feet just take you. So for that to be such an easy thing to get, a part of your lifestyle, to see it as, I'm going to write a technique book. I'm going to monetize off of this beautiful cultural thing that we do. I'm going to create cultural competitions, and then we're going to compete and take it. They've missed that kind of mark of seeing the value, as I've said, of competition. And that's why I love competing. That's why I love competitive shows. That's why I love competitive dancing, because I truly believe that competition, it invites innovation. Mm-hmm. If you want to be the best, you're going to think of so many different things and different ways to be the best. And if this one wants to be the best, and if this one wasn't, then it just drives that innovation. And then we all become kind of involved in this sport. Then you get sponsors and people are going to put a bet on it. And then you get dance moms who are like, I'm going to give my life so that my child can be the best Kwaito dancer. But we don't, unfortunately, have that. We don't have yet that idea or the mindset or the mentality to go, this is a great thing, this is a special thing, this is something that is unique, and we can make something of it. And I'm going to speak only for South Africans. Mm-hmm. We haven't yet learned that we could take dancing and make something amazing out of it, where people could become professional dancers and make a living out of it. For me, I needed to go to Germany. I needed to go to England, where people don't know me, but they love dance so much that they love what I do. If I say I'm a dancer at home, they go, what do you do? The soki? What do you clap? What can I, do you know what I mean? Are you going to come to my daughter's party or something? It's not really valued
right
to that point where it is here. Here, they're like, if you think German team, they have they really go far. You have the provincial, they give you money, that you go for lessons. There's a system that you need to do for you to win. When you win money, you win something. In England, you can be competitive dancing. If you don't want to be a competitive dancer, you can be on Strictly. There are options, there are choices that people have. And in South Africa, when I say I want to be a Latin dancer, you can be an 8-time South African Latin dancer, but you have to be something else as well. And not solely because you're not good enough, but because it's not given that support that it should be. And when there's no support, as you know, if you don't get the support, there's not going to be a lot you can do with it. There are thousands of dancers in South Africa. There are thousands of OTs. There are better OTs. Thousands in, and not just South Africa. We have dancing in Namibia, we have dancing in Botswana, we have dancing in Mozambique, we have dancing in Zimbabwe, they are in Malawi. They are actual federations of dance and it's multiracial. Darren is world champ, Blackpool champ, he's white. There's loads of us. Darren Hammond.
Yeah.
But there's just not that financial support. There's not that investment in dance, and not just Latin Aboriginal, but just all that cultural dancing, indigenous dancing that we have. There's no we can level up. There isn't that. And if there was, there would be an influx of dancers that are from all kind of races that actually do Latin Aboriginal, because it's such an amazing sport. I feel like it's so unique. It's so different. We have technique books, we have trainers, we have coaches, we have competitions, we have different federations. There's politics within this thing that people call a hobby. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And of course, when you're in it, you're going, this, I'm going to quit because it's politics. But at least it's there. At least it's there. There's not enough of that elsewhere. And I think once maybe the government supports it, or parents, not even the government, it's not blaming the government, but if parents and the whole community decided this is going to be a thing that we invest in, this is going to be a thing that I see my child doing and then making a living out of, and I'm not going to stop until they do, once parents take that mindset and apply it to their child to do dancing, it could change, and you would see so much diversity. You would see doors open. And I know certain people came from South Africa and to compete, and it was really tough because it looked different. They looked different, and they're in the beginning, maybe years ago, like my sister, they would have been like, "We don't know. That just looks different. What is that?" But when I came into the market, they were like, "Oh my goodness, we like different." So, you know, it's also pin. People are like, we want different. We want you to clap and snap your tongue and we embrace it. We love it. It's so different. And if we just had the financial support and the belief in ourselves to do it, I think it would all look different. And at the moment, I don't see any child from where I'm from, Pretoria, being able to afford to get a visa, a 3-month visa to go and compete in the Kremlin Cup. Where the kids there, their dads own mines and electricity of Russia. Let's be careful, Russia's. They will stop this podcast. Show me. I gotta be careful what I say about the Russians. Let's just go to Poland. I'm gonna switch it to Poland. I don't see a poor child being able to afford the visa and the dress and the lessons and the time to be able to compete in Poland properly without the support. There needs to be that support, and until people at home start investing in themselves and wanting better for themselves, it won't change.
I see it won't change.
And the Federation of Dance as well, and I'm a patriot of ISCD, I think more competitions internationally will be so great, because
I think that's the key.
One of my biggest moments was 1998, Rumba in the Jungle, watching Brian Watson, Paul Killick, Carmen, Hannah, all the greats
What an era.
competing in South Africa. They were, do you know what I mean? They were coming, yeah, to Donnybus, they were coming out of these African shells. They were being immersed from the sky. Things were happening that I never, ever, ever thought was possible. And if it wasn't for that, I would have never even imagined that even being a possibility. Just to see it, it's so important. And you don't honestly, sometimes for me, you don't need to be black. It's not about that. It's just about that it's there.
Yes.
It's possible. Yeah. And I saw it and I was like, that's what I want to do. Not always does it have to be about color or in my situation or about sex or what people kind of perceive as right or wrong. It's just the fact that it's there. It's there. And then there's a seed planted in my head. Yes. Yeah, that I can make this happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is needed. It's just the dancing world needs to travel all over the world instead of thinking dancers from all over the world need to go to this one place.
Yeah.
Because dance is universal and there's no reason why we can't move these international competitions to actually go to Malaysia or to actually go to Turkmenistan or Uzbekistan or, or New Zealand or Brazil. Why has there never been a dance competition in Brazil? Blows my mind.
Yeah.
Or in Cuba.
Yeah.
Or in Panama. That's where it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, hopefully you're playing a massive part in paving the way for all of this stuff.
I hope so. I hope so. And then, you know what? I think there's still a lot more. I'm very, very sure that there will be a lot more dancers that come after me from South Africa. I think there'll be some incredible dancers that are going to come from the back and then go and show the world what they're made of.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to it. So before we finish, tell me about you. You've got so much going on at the moment. Like you've got so many projects. Like I say, every time I turn on the TV, there's Oatie.
But that's the benefits of daytime television. It's every day.
I've when I'm watching Match of the Day and they're saying, right, who do you think is going to be Tottenham Hotspur's new manager? I'm saying, it's probably going to be Oti Mabuse.
If I was into football, I'd probably do that too. If there was a spot that I was good at besides stars, I'd be there. I'd be like, yep, cricket, you need to catch the ball? I'll catch it. I'll hit the bat. What do you need?
So out of your hundreds of projects, three of them that I definitely know about coming up. You've got a book coming out. You've got your tour, your
yes.
tour, and the Masked Dancer that's going to be on TV as well.
Yes.
Tell me about all these things.
So my book, basically, that is called Dance with OT, and there's never really, again, this is me doing different things. There's never been a dance book for kids from anyone on Strictly. You see, I go the opposite way. No, I think lockdown really made me aware of the situation with kids and how important it is sometimes that we give back. My next door neighbor is a boy, he's 4 years old. And I remember in lockdown, the parents were just so frustrated that they didn't know what they were going to do with him. They had no clue. And I love saying hi to him. I love saying hi. And I had to say hi to him through a window. And that really, like, you know, those moments when you're like, oh my gosh, this is real. And everybody's going through this. So I then started my lockdown dance classes, and that kind of somehow got the ball rolling. And then I was asked to do Boogie BBs, which is for BBC CBeebies, a kids dance show, and that really elevated it. And this company Walkers came up and they said, we want you to write a book because you're into Tony Robbins and Jay Shetty, and write it about confidence. I was like, I'm not confident. Yes, you are. And like, but I can't write about confidence, but let's write something that I'm passionate about at the moment. And they were like, okay, what is it? And I was like, kids, I do my dance classes. I communicate with the kids we have so many messages of women and dads actually saying that the dance class has actually brought them together as a family. They've never had any point of conversation before. They've never had something that they could do. What does a 40-year-old and an 8-year-old do together?
Yeah.
An activity that can actually do together, not mom tell children what to do or children drive parents crazy, but what can they do together? And it was the dance classes. And I was like, I would love to write a book about the dance classes. And that's how the idea came forward. And I loved it because it taught me how to write. I'd never written before. I was writing like my own, like I said, I want to do everything. So I was writing musicals, I was writing dramas, I was writing this, I was writing books, I was writing all of these things in lockdown. But that really made me feel like, okay, I'm writing something worthwhile and I'm hoping that this is going to help people or entertain people. Or it's going to connect with people. I wanted something as well that was really close to me, which is kids and their mental health. And how kids also experience emotions and insecurities and self-doubt, but we never address it. This is something we address when they're teenagers, or we address it when they're in their 20s, but never when they're 3, 4, 5, 6. And like my sister always does this with my niece. She goes, what are you feeling? Tell me what you're feeling. And she'd be like, I'm sad. Or she'd be like, what are you feeling? She'd be like, I'm nervous. And I just thought that was such an important lesson, that they learn how to acknowledge what they're feeling so that they can grow, because then they're a lot more self-aware. And that's the combination of what the book is, a dance book about kids who feel what they feel, trying to learn to dive. And somewhere along comes a bird. There's a bird somewhere there disrupting it all.
Is that out, that's yes. out already? Is that out already?
It's going to come out. No, it's going to come out on the 27th of May.
Okay, cool.
I think. Yeah. I might be getting that wrong. I say stuff that I don't know. It might be.
And your theatre tour?
Oh, well, that was supposed to be big. There's never ever been a female professional dancer who's ever had her own show who is still on the show. It was this never, ever. They always partner up with someone else. Not one. And that was like, I was so looking forward to doing it. And I Am Here basically is my name. So my name, obviously, you know, it's not Oti, it's Utile. But directly translated means I Am Here. And I just named it after that. And I wanted it to be something that was away from the show, about coming from Africa to Germany to England and the whole cultural change of all of that, but learning about musicals. I watched my first musical when I was 26. I mean, that was new, and the feelings that I felt then about the women that have been in my life to get me to where I am, because it takes a village. You don't ever achieve anything by yourself. And kind of the obstacles that I had to overcome to actually leave South Africa, because it takes a lot to leave and people tell you you can't do it. And I wanted to put that in a form of a musical theater show, and also be like two other female professionals who might come after me or who are my colleagues, that we can do it by ourselves. You don't always need to cling on to one of the popular, we are good enough. We are people, because a lot of the times you might not be sure where people stand in their opinions of you. You might not be sure. And it was really scary, but it sold out most of the dates within 48 hours. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And I just wanted to, again, say thank you. Because people who are going to come there, I hope, like me. So that is going to be my way of, in person, saying thank you to them as well.
Wicked.
Hopefully. If you don't like me, then it's going to be a terrible show. It's going to be terrible. But I'm hoping that they do, because, you know, I'm trying to promote something here.
And what about the Masked Dancer? What
Masked Dancer?
Our screens. Because I'm the Masked Singer.
Yes, the thing about the mass dancer that I really love is that no one knows what it's going to be like, you know, and everybody has their perception of, okay, this is just, what is this? We have the mass singer, why do we need the mass dancer? But it is such a brilliant show. It is, and I don't even know what to say without giving away things. You're going to see things that you can do. You're going to see people that you feel like you know, and it ignites something in you. I think the mass dancer for me takes emotional dance to another level. When we dance, it's so much in the face, what you feel, how you move your body, but there is no face. And somehow you need to learn how to emote with your body, just as a beetroot. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes people can be like, what is this? I don't understand what's happening. But it also takes it further, but by saying that it's not just a dance show, but it's a guessing show that has to do with dancing, but also a really good dance show. And I guess that madness of, why am I looking at a rubber chicken dance and liking it? What? Why? Why? Mm. How? How is that even possible? Yeah. And I love being a part of that process. I love that they were able to use music that meant something to them. The clothes that they were wearing were clues as to who they are. It was about their careers. So you have people who have accomplished incredible things. And some of the things, some of the people, you'll be like, I know them. And then it's not them. And someone crazy like me, I'm like, someone as crazy as me, they just drives me nuts. And it's just fun. We had so much fun. I remember not even wanting to leave set. I didn't want to leave. I was like, am I back tomorrow? And they were like, no, next week. Oh. I really hope. And the thing is, we were talking about it. I was saying the kids are definitely going to love the costumes. Mm-hmm. And the teenagers get to enjoy, and like teenagers up to 35 get to enjoy the choreography, and sort of like 25, 35 year olds and higher get to enjoy seeing some of their favorite celebrities be revealed. And so it becomes a whole family show that is so different, because Strictly is watching your favorite celebrity learn a skill. This is hoping that it is your favorite celebrity who can make it far. Mm-hmm. Oh, I said something without saying anything. Oh. That's what I loved. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm looking forward to all of these things, and obviously your
thank you
as well. Like with your presenting, that you interviewed me on Seth's Pat Lunch the other week.
Oh my God! How nerve-wracking was that? I feel like I had prepped you. I've given you everything that you need to. I was like, I've got this. This, by the way, was my first ever live interview on my own. Yeah, I got there and Steph was like, okay, we've done a bit of work, because Steph has been incredible. She's been mentoring me through this whole thing. And she goes, today's your interview. I was like, she goes, you get the whole thing. You lead the whole thing. I'm just going to back. I'll ask two questions. I'll sit back. I'm like, okay, fine. Oh, nerve-wracking. And I was like, Kev, I'm not going to ask you anything. I'm not going to do that. And then she came out and I was like, Steph McGovern, why? That's so funny. You were literally sitting there like this, like, enjoying my life. And it almost came like a slow moving train towards you. Like, what just happened here?
Look at you like,
I love her.
Bail me out.
Yeah. And I'm going, Steph. And she's laughing, but like, she's so fun like that. Yeah. So fun. I love
that.
She sent
me a DM afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, did she?
And you texted me. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, it was okay. I was like, yeah, it's all good.
No, it was funny. She's so sweet. And she's like, okay, let me do it. And like, even because you have, this is the thing. So I don't know what I did. I moved. So I didn't hear what they asked in my in-ear because it fell out. And as soon as she said it, I turned and the earpiece fell out. And I was like, I have no idea what happens in this situation now. And I'm like, okay, get back in my ear. And all I hear is them. They were just laughing. They were just like, everyone is going, oh my goodness. The whole gallery is just cracking. We're laughing.
Oh god.
But thank you for being a good sport.
Nah, you know. But yeah, well done with all of this stuff and, you know, on your back-to-back Strictly wins and everything that you're achieving at the moment. And I look forward to all the things that are coming up. Really proud of you. Not that you need my, you know.
Thank you. No, it means a lot, though. It means a lot.
But yeah, really proud of you. You're doing amazing stuff. And let's make it, in the spirit of Tony Robbins, like taking out an oar and going, let's row it in that direction. Let's make a decision that one day me and you are going to work on a musical together.
Yes. Boom. Make your move. That's my move.
And also, it's been really lovely to, this is the first interview I've done in ages where I haven't felt any kind of need to say, how has lockdown been for you?
Yay! That's why they get me. I'm a good time, Kev.
Well, Oti Mabuse, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Kev. Thanks for having me.